This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Well, you've been in some Game 7s. What's it like to play in a Game 7?
Yeah, it's special. I don't know if we've won one yet, so we're up to the test.
I'm sure people have told them since. No, you haven't won a Game 7. That's William Nylander after the command performance by him and players like Jake McCabe, who was awesome, Joseph Woll, who was awesome, Matthew Nyes, who was awesome in that game last night. Who would have thunk it when they were getting booed off the ice and we were trading everybody and firing everybody, and we still might. We'll see what happens on Saturday. That the Maple Leafs would have forced a Game 7. But here we are. I don't know if it's as much about the Maple Leafs as it is about the Boston Bruins, probably a combination of the both. We'll get into both sides of this story here coming up in a couple of moments. Elliot, by the way, is in Newfoundland with a number of our colleagues for Bob Cole's funeral. So we hope everyone there is doing well as they can, considering the circumstances. So we will move on here. Bottom of the hour, Hal Gill will stop by, a Predators analyst. We'll see the Nashville Predators tonight looking to stave off elimination against the Vancouver Canucks. Also, Shayna Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast drops by to kick off hour two. Gary Lawless. Maddie, you booked the mayor.
I did. It was,
Maddie,
the mayor is always tough.
Ooh, you
always
got
tough.
The mayor.
No, he is far from tough to book. He is a very good man, Mr. Lawless.
I love Gary. So he'll stop by. We'll talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. They look to stave off elimination against the Dallas Stars. Now in three games in a row against the defending Stanley Cup champions. We wondered yesterday about how the Dallas Stars social media would react should they eliminate the defending Stanley Cup champions and public enemy number one around the NHL, the Vegas Golden Knights. We may get that answer tonight. In the meantime, two things. One, what's up with that shirt?
It's excellent. It's Friday. I'm gonna wear colorful shirts on Friday.
Mm.
There's one, Jeff.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll bring it out next week.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy. It's colorful. That might hurt your eyes.
Is this going to be like the, is this how you're going to be in middle age? Is this going to be you with that stash?
I am in middle age. Like, that's the thing. I'm 35.
Middle age is pushed now. Right? Like the 50 is a new 30. Like middle age is
so pushed. 35 is the new what? Tell my body that, because it's not.
Just because you feel middle age doesn't mean you are middle age.
That's true.
About last night, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait, do you want some news before we do that?
Yeah, what's the latest?
Todd Reirden has been relieved of his duties by the Pittsburgh Penguins, assistant coach there.
So, one thing there really quickly. So, Elliot and I talk about this on the podcast that came out this morning. And we'll stand by to see what happens with perhaps other assistants as well, maybe Mike Folucci. We talked about the various, you know, coaching situations around the NHL and wondered about Mike Sullivan. And it sounds like Mike Sullivan is fine, thank you very much, and is going to stay as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but we weren't so sure about the assistants, and so Todd Reirden now becomes the first casualty there. I don't know if that'll be the only casualty, Maddie, amongst the assistants with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but let's just say this one wasn't unexpected.
Yeah, and it comes with pressure too, right now? Like, once you fire the assistants, the target is then on the head coach.
I think Mike Sullivan's fine.
No. Not, I'm saying, like, right now he's fine, but when you start firing all the assistants, and, like, then
Don't forget, too, like, this is Kyle Dubas's, again, I'm going to get back to the playoffs here, but just a quick aside. This is Kyle Dubas's second go-around as a general manager of an NHL team. Both times he has inherited coaches with long-term contracts.
And
first Mike Babcock and now Mike Sullivan.
And very well-respected coaches at their timing of his arrival as well, right?
Correct. We should do some coach talk a little bit later on. In the meantime, what did you make of last night? Like, first of all, let's just get this out of the way. Was it dramatic? Yes. Was it emotional? Absolutely. Did it grab your emotions like a roller coaster and go up and down and up and down for three periods? Absolutely.
Sure.
Whether you're a Boston Bruins fan or a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. But can we all be on the same page that it was a pretty bad hockey game?
Yeah, sloppy.
The game itself was, again, everything else that came with the game, the emotion, the drama, the jubilation if you're a Maple Leafs fan, the disappointment if you're a Boston Bruins fan, that was all there, but that was all baked into the pie before they even dropped the puck. The game was...
It was a dog's breakfast.
Pretty tough one to watch. But nonetheless, William Nylander with a pair of goals, and the Maple Leafs win 2-1, and here we are to Game 7 on Saturday. What did you take away from last night, other than Joseph Woll? Holy smokes.
He was excellent. I thought
great.
The one of my biggest takeaways was I think the Leafs found finally an effective checking line. Because that is something that has eluded them basically all season. You looked, it's like, okay, this iteration of this, this iteration of that. Nothing screamed like a line that could go out there, cause havoc, and play good defensively. And I think they found that in Connor Dewar, David Kampf, and Calle Järnkrok. I thought they were excellent. They had multiple shifts where they kept a lot of pressure on the Bruins and kept them hemmed in the zone. I thought they were good. To me, Matthew Knies was one of the top two most effective players on the ice last night. Yeah. He was excellent. And so that was a guy that they missed in the series against Florida. He was excellent against Tampa. Mm-hmm. And we always had talked in the past that the Leafs have struggled because they don't have those guys. And by what I'm saying with those guys is the guys who play a certain style that in the playoffs translates to being effective. And that's what Matthew Knies has done. He's probably not going to be a 30-goal scorer in the NHL.
You don't know that.
You don't know that. But he might not. But when the games matter, he plays a certain way that is super effective. He's great on the forecheck. He was really good defensively last night.
Great on the boards last night.
And the play that sealed it was Matthew Knies taking a hit to make a play and a very smart play. Because he could have easily just chipped it up the boards.
Yep.
And William Nylander calling for the puck, I'm sure. I thought those guys were excellent. But Joseph Woll, to me, Jeff, not getting a lot of work in the first periods of each of the last two games. I don't know that. I'm not a goalie, so I can't really speak to it. But I can't imagine that it's the easiest thing in the world where you're just kind of like waiting. Bruins fired a bunch of shots at the net. The Leafs blocked 27 of them.
Yep.
But when you're not feeling the puck early on, it does feel like something that, you know, maybe a hindrance in your game. He wasn't affected by it at all.
Not at all. And that made it even more difficult, I think, for Joseph Woll yesterday. Shots were 12-1.
Yeah.
Boston.
For the longest time.
For the first period, 12-1 shots on goal. Maple Leafs out shooting the Boston Bruins there. And it wasn't until halfway through the second that they kind of woke up and started to throw some pucks at Joseph Woll.
And they were good in that stretch.
To stay that mentally sharp through the first period where you're not getting anything.
Yep.
Half of the second period, you're still not getting anything. And then, boom, the floodgates open. And say whatever you want. Like, there's still some really good shooters there. David Pastrnak, and we'll get to him in a couple of seconds. Brad Marchand, Jake DeBrusque, Trent Frederick all of a sudden has discovered he's a sniper as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting a lot of action. But in order to stay mentally sharp that he didn't fall apart when all of a sudden it shifted from I can kind of sleepwalk through this game to now I better pay attention every second.
Yeah. And he's been in high pressure. He's only played in elimination games in the playoffs.
Wild, eh?
Four games. They've all been elimination games. Obviously, last year because of the injury to Samsonov. This year, a little bit different. But you can say that he has been that good in elimination games in every one he's played. Even in the game they lost against Florida in overtime. He was excellent in that game. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the reason why they got to overtime.
Here's one of the questions I have now for this Game 7 on Saturday. I think we understand what the consequences are for the Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been spelled out, probably in the room as well. Hey, look, if this thing goes south here, it's going to be my job, might be your job, might be his job, might be the guy above me's job. We'll see. So I think everybody understands the stakes here. And do I think that the Maple Leafs have done, quote unquote, enough right now that that is not going to be a thing should they lose in Game 7? No. They lose in Game 7. I think every conversation that we've had about this team still exists,
mm-hmm.
and the consequences are still there. Yep. Here becomes the question, though. If the Boston Bruins lose Game 7, what are the consequences there? And are we actually even talking about, because listen, Pastrnak's not going anywhere, McAvoy's not going anywhere, Brad Marchand can extend on July 1st.
Yeah.
Linus Ullmark, probably, I can see a new destination there.
Okay.
They still have a new deal to do with Jeremy Swayman. But are we actually looking at Jim Montgomery? Are we actually looking at Jim Montgomery here? If the Boston Bruins lose on Saturday, back-to-back seasons, the Boston Bruins go up in the first round, 3-1, and cave. Are we actually thinking about Jim Montgomery here? Because Boston will not take this one lying down. Not for one second. Do you see Sweeney or Neely saying, this is fine. Just happens. Not a chance.
I'm chuckling because I've seen Maple Leafs teams blow 3-1 series leads and the coach stays there. So it would be kind of ironic. I don't know how you don't have a long look at that particular conversation. Because at the end of the day, Jeff, it's all about results, and we understand that. And regular season success hasn't been a problem for Boston with Jim Montgomery at the helm. They set a record for most points ever last year. But you have to at least question what's going on there with Jim Montgomery behind the bench and making adjustments in the playoffs. And
hang on. So last year, so there's a very different vibe from Montgomery year to year.
Sure.
Okay, let's just pause on this for 1 second. So last season, opening round, they go up 3-1 against the Florida Panthers.
Yep.
The Panthers start to chip their way back. And the vibe from Jim Montgomery is very much, hey, it's chill. Don't worry, guys. It's all good. We got this. Let's relax. With the Boston Bruins just set a regular season record. We are the big bees, the whole deal. This year, it's different.
You
this
can hear it.
This year, it's at guys.
Yep.
This year, it's expectation. This year, it's angry. This isn't like the nice guy coach anymore.
No.
Like, the tone is completely different around the Boston Bruins. But so far, the result is trending towards the same. You know, I was talking to someone with a different team on my way in today. And he said to me, the Maple Leafs are going to do this, aren't they? And I said, look, if history is indication, don't bet on anything either way here.
Is this person new to the league?
No, this person's been in the league for 25 years. And I said to this person, you know, why do you think the Maple Leafs are going to do this, given their history? And given, you know, they're probably going to have to do it without Austin Matthews, comma, again. And he said, it has nothing to do with the Maple Leafs. He said, you know, I've watched, you know, I've been involved in hockey my whole life. He said, I've watched this so many times where when you lose your game and you lose the game, it's so hard to get it back. He said, this is nothing about the Maple Leafs. He said, this is all about the Boston Bruins. How can they get their game back? How can they get any of it back? He said, who's skating with any confidence out there? And it's not like a switch. You just bang, turn on, oh, the fans are cheering. All of a sudden, it's different. He said, the hardest thing here isn't going to be for the Maple Leafs to win this. It's going to be for the Boston Bruins not to lose this. He said, because their game is gone.
Yeah.
Their game is gone right now.
Yeah, it's super, like, the dynamic, you know, there was a, like, you talked about the confidence. Brad Marchand was playing with a lot of confidence and playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday, we saw a little bit of frustration from Brad Marchand, something that we hadn't really seen in this series. And now, all of a sudden,
pushing linesmen out of the way?
Yeah, that would be one of them. As somebody said, the beautiful game. And now it's almost gotten, there was a time in this series where Brad Marchand was getting under everybody else's skin. Now it feels like it's gone
Everyone's
the opposite way.
Skin. Yeah.
And there's one thing that you can say if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs is that Brad Marchand, and I've given him credit throughout the series, he's been towing that line, not crossed it.
Yep.
The Leafs have figured out at some point the bubble's going to burst here. He's going to snap a little bit.
I don't know. I don't think this... In years past, yes, I would have agreed with you. I don't know that he's that guy at all.
Not
anymore.
Snapping to the point where, but enough to get him over that line. He's not going to like go so far past it, but I think he's getting, because of the frustration with the way his team has played too, you could push him over that line. He's that type of player that if you could get him off a little bit, it's going to send waves throughout the rest of the team. The fact that they haven't gotten a drop from David Pastrnak now, granted, the Leafs have played him very physical. Mm-hmm. They've been all over him, something that I didn't expect that they would. Jake McCabe probably being at the top of that list. Simon Benoit caught him pretty good yesterday, too. So how about we hear from Jim Montgomery about what he had to say about top two players. Here's Jim Montgomery from last night.
You got so much out of Marchand earlier in this series. Do you need more out of both him and Pastrnak in for Game 7?
Your best players need to be your best players this time of year. I think the effort is tremendous. They need to come through with some big-time plays and big-time moments. I think Marchand has done that in the series. Pasta needs to step up.
Wow.
Sounds like me in university. Yeah. I'm broke. Pasta needs to step
up. These ramen really need to step up.
But again, you hear the tone.
Yeah.
Like, compare that to Jim Montgomery last year against the Florida Panthers. The tone is completely different.
But that's also a reflection on maybe Jim Montgomery feeling the pressure for his own job, too. But don't you have to have that in the back of your mind? You're hired to be fired, right?
I don't think you can coach like that.
No, though. I don't think you can coach like that. But I think in the way that you speak sometimes, it may come through without you even realize it. Like, coaches, generally speaking, are very calculated. But when you lose a game like that where you basically didn't show up for 30 minutes, that's really frustrating if you're a coach. And, you know, sometimes you just say things and you're like, oh, that one got out.
Okay, you want to hear a conversation I had this morning about this game?
Yes.
About a conversation I had about the...
officiating?
In Game 7.
Oh.
So.
Uh-oh.
Had a conversation with Josh Smith. Do you know who Josh Smith is?
Haven't we had Josh on the show before?
Yes, we have. From Scouting the Refs.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I knew I recognized
you're not
name.
Following Scouting the Refs. Shame on you.
Yeah, you
follow
should be.
Scouting the Refs. So I'm just wondering here, because we know that they, for games like six and certainly game sevens, they'll blow up the established pairs and just try to get top dogs in there
sure.
to do the biggies. So going back and forth with Josh this morning about who has worked series and who hasn't and who we think might work game seven.
Oh, boy.
Five ref pairs. Ready for this one, Maddie? Five referee pairs have not worked this series. Lee and Lequier, Macaulay Nicholson, Hanson Furlatt, St. Laurent McIsaac, and Chmielewski O'Rourke. St. Laurent's working tonight.
So he's not working it.
He's out. Pairs will get blown up. O'Rourke worked game six.
So he out.
So that leaves three pairs. Now.
And Leaf fans will not like two of them.
If that gets blown up, right, you're left with Lee, McCauley, Furlatt. Now, Wes McCauley is on standby in Nashville tonight.
It's got to take him out, right?
Not sure about Lee. There is a, I think, more than legitimate chance that the referees that we see tomorrow, Game 7, Maple Leafs, Boston Bruins, Kelly Sutherland, and Wes McCauley.
Wow. You should check your mentions because it's going to blow up.
We'll see. Again, this is all just...
We are just
nothing's been announced. Nothing has been certainly shared by the NHL. But when would we find that out? If we're betting, sounds like that's where smart money might be.
Would we find that out today?
Tomorrow.
Oh boy.
Again, I just want to throw that.
The NHL's
into
writing
the conversation
the,
mix.
They're writing the script without writing the script.
I'm not saying
writing the script because. That's going to be the difference in the game. It's kind of funny.
You know where you're going to find out? You're going to find out at Scouting the Refs.
Yes, you will. That's
Josh's
right.
Josh's site, Josh's social media, follow that man on Twitter, at Scouting the Refs. If things like that either interest or maybe if you're a Maple Leafs fan in this situation, concern you.
Oh, yeah. But Leaf fans will find a reason to be concerned about anything, the way that this team has performed in the playoffs. By the way.
Yes.
Everything that I did yesterday worked, just so you know.
Okay, so what was your tradition then? Okay, so I retweeted your snacks from last night.
They were
so
good.
What was it yesterday specifically that you did?
Well, my daughter did not wear her jersey.
You're such a bad dad. Like, seriously, like, what parent says to their kid, no, you can't wear a jersey that you want? Yeah, that one to my left. Camera
it,
right.
You know what? My daughter will appreciate it. One day she will grow up with the same dumb stupid stitions as I have. And she's going to be like, you know what, Dad? I get it.
Thanks for not letting me wear a jersey.
Yeah, she's not going to remember.
Game.
She remembered when I told her to move away from the lawnmower yesterday because she told my wife.
Well, that's good.
But and then it was off to Buddy's house.
Yeah.
We had the mini Cubanos for the win. By the way, there is pulled pork in there, too. That was the other thing that I forgot. They're really good. I had a lot of people ask me where to get
them. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Buddy's house and the mini Cubanos.
And they had to be done at a certain time. So we're now on the time of day and not the period in which we had them.
And this all stays true for Saturday then, including not wearing, letting your daughter wear her favorite hockey sweater?
Correct. If she asks, it's no. Jeff, sometimes you have to tell your kids no.
But something as frivolous as that, good Lord, man.
It worked.
Not my job to judge other parents, but holy smokes. I don't think Mark Casey is going to get on the cover of today's Parent Magazine.
You know what's funny is my wife actually said to my daughter before one of the games, not last game, that my daughter pointed to the jersey and she said, your dad's not going to let you wear that. on a
your
game day.
Your wife said that too?
Yeah, she says your dad's not going to let you wear that on a game day.
You're such a donkey, I swear.
Oh, well, whatever.
You're the worst.
I'm excited for game seven. Maybe the only one that we're going to have
happens tonight. We'll find out. So tonight's Canucks and the Preds. We're going to get with Hal Gill here coming up in a couple of moments and Stars in the Vegas Golden Knights. By the way, yesterday, JT Miller wearing Arthur Shelob's dress shirt in practice.
The salmon one?
It was so beautiful. Such a gorgeous thing. Absolutely loved it.
That's the other thing, too, about staying loose in the playoffs. Like, I wonder, because you can't get too uptight, right? That's part of this whole thing.
Someone want to tell Jim Montgomery that?
Yeah, honestly. That's where I wonder where a team, Boston less so, because, I don't know, they're just in a weird spot. But a team like Vancouver, maybe you haven't played. Andrew Burnett seemed to believe that Vancouver, that was their best game in game five. And maybe it was. Nashville was up to the test. But if you're Vancouver, it's been a tough series in trying to break through offensively, something that you didn't have a problem with all year. And now all of a sudden, it's a problem. I wonder, just even something silly like what JT Miller did yesterday, just trying to keep just a little bit of levity at this point in the year. Because if you're so wound up and serious, I don't know how you perform in a game like that. I mean, they're professionals, so maybe I'm off base here, but that's got to be at least part of it with a team like Vancouver at this point. Especially after what they dealt with all last year, too.
Yeah.
That was a mess.
You know, the thing that I keep coming back to, though, with Vancouver, this is their first time at it. Like, this is... like,
it's weird.
What
did
we all say in the pre... Well, what did I say? No chance, no playoffs.
Well...
this is not going to be a playoff team. Not only their playoff team, like, they may have, like, a significant run here. And there's going to be some significant hardware for a lot of people at the end of the year. We're going to get to the Jack Adams in a second.
Yeah.
I keep reminding myself, like, don't forget here, this is this team's first kick at it. And this team is going to be good for a lot of years. It's not like this is a one and done, and then it's, okay, scurry away, and we'll see in a number of years back here in the playoffs. Like, this team's going to be good for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And they got key pieces wrapped up for a long time. They're going to be good for a long time now. But this is their first shot at it as a team.
It's so weird to think of the Canucks that way. I don't know why.
Why? It's true.
It's true. But
where have you been the last few years?
Where they've been, not in it. Out of it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, for whatever reason, maybe it's because of the season that they had, that it doesn't feel like they've been out of it for so long because they were so good. And I think that's part of where we forget about that side of it.
At a certain point, it stopped being cute that Vancouver was winning all these games. And it was like, holy smokes, Vancouver's like legit good.
Well, we did see this a little bit at the end of last year too. Once Rick Tocchet took over, you could see the change.
But I think sane people look at that and say empty calorie wins, throw it away.
Sure. Sure. But I think you can also have hindsight in this one and say, okay, we saw some of the changes and now they've implemented them and it's carried over into the following season. You're right. You can't, like the Ottawa Senators every single year. It's the same story.
Yeah.
And they're going to win all these games and they're going to take themselves out
they're taking a turn. Here come the Sens. Yeah. Out of runway. Too bad.
They took the turn away from Macklin Celebrini. That's the turn that they took. Hey, have you seen the Jake Oettinger stat that he has not given up a goal in the third period?
I know.
I was when you were off sick the other day, I was talking to Brian Ray and we were talking about Jake Oettinger, and this was the same case last year, but in a different way. It was from games 5 to 7, his numbers were excellent. They were incredible. Now it's the third period that he has not allowed a goal. Now, we're talking about it, so of course he's going to allow a goal in the third period tonight.
Naturally.
But we talk about money goalies.
Yep.
And we talked, you had the comparisons, and a lot of people did, Jake Oettinger and Carey Price.
That's why I thought.
And now you watch him again and you're like, okay, he does feel like he's in a groove again.
Hang on. I want to clarify that.
Sure.
Because I got a lot of grief for saying that, mainly from Montreal Canadiens fans.
Stunner.
But here's
in both languages?
Here's what I mean. That's what Bricky always says. When it comes to the Habs, you're dumb in two languages, guy. The thing that I mean about Jake Oettinger, and I'll go back to that Calgary Flames series where he was incredible.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he's playing like Carey Price or is going to be as good as Carey Price. The main point is more he's going to be as important to the Dallas Stars as Carey Price was to the Montreal Canadiens.
Sure.
Do you think that's fair?
I think it's fair, and it's a really interesting way to look at it because this Dallas Stars team, top to bottom, is way better than those Montreal teams were.
Yes, the most complete team in the NHL, the Dallas Stars. And we've seen that the last three
games. And that speaks to how good Jake Oettinger is and can be. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very fair way to look at it.
It's the only position on the Dallas Stars that we are concerned about going into the playoffs, right? Were you the same way? I was. Maddie, were you the same way?
Yeah, we saw what happened in game one. There was definitely some concern after game one,
whoa,
too.
Are they going to go to the backup? As long as Oettinger was fine, didn't he be anything better than fine, the Dallas Stars were going to be okay. And now that Oettinger is more than fine, the Dallas Stars are just rolling right now, and they are a machine. And we'll see what happens tonight. I still do think, though, in the back of my mind, I'm still thinking this thing is going seven. Now, maybe I just want it to go seven because I want to see seven games of this.
You want to see seven games in every series.
I want to see Nashville and Vancouver go seven. That's a beautiful 100%. Series. I want to see it all. Like, let's be honest here. Like, the first round, eh.
It's been way more of a dud than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a lot better. And having maybe three series go to seven games may change our opinion on that.
Could be.
But it didn't look like that. We could. There was a chance that we saw five series, one sweep and five other series at five games and finishing. Thankfully for the Leafs, they've gotten to a game seven for entertainment purposes. Hopefully the other two, we just want to see good hockey. And there's nothing better than a game seven. There isn't. Yep. Game seven overtime, as long as it's not the West Coast game, as long as it's not late, that's fine.
Maddie, stay up. Get the toothpick. Get the Clockwork Orange
in
your
eyes.
Yeah,
you really have to prop the eyes open at that time of the day. Yeah, the morning comes really early. But I just, Dallas to me, and the fact that Dallas, you know, they went into Vegas, no Marchment, no Foxa, and they haven't had Hawk and Paw for the whole series.
Yeah.
Three guys that play pretty big roles on this team to go into Vegas, and that just more proves the point that Pete DeBoer was trying to make, which was, I didn't think we played all that bad in the first two games. We just lost them. Right.
Faxa's in. Let me pause on Faxa really quickly here. Just a quick thought on him. That's a guy that a lot of teams have tried to get for a long time. For the longest time in his career, he's been a low key Selke candidate. And that is one of the players, like, for example, I don't believe that it's true anymore and hasn't been for a couple of years. But historically, and it's weird saying historically when you say Vegas, but historically, the Vegas Golden Knights have always been interested in trying to get Radek Faxa away from the Dallas Stars. And they've never been able to put it together. Either the ask back from Dallas was too high, I don't know. But, you know, there were teams again this year that were interested in Faxa. And I believe it would have been Pete DeBoer, someone from the coaching staff, it must have been Pete, who said, like, don't trade this guy. Mm-hmm. This guy is going to be too valuable for us in the postseason. It's these kinds of guys that coaches love. In the postseason.
Led the team in shorthanded minutes in the regular season.
Guys like Radek Faxa.
Or forwards.
So that injury is a profound one.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, there's a lot of found money all over this organization.
Yeah. Well, Marchment, he had 20 goals and, you know, played on your bottom six.
I mean, everybody had 20 everybody, goals. Everybody had 20 goals in Dallas goals.
Did you want to do, so coach of the year, Jack Adams.
Yeah, real quick. So
Rick Bowness.
Go for it. Rick Bowness, Andrew Burnett, and Rick Tocchet. Yeah. So, no surprise there. Probably Rick Tocchet ends up winning this thing.
Yeah.
I think we're all on the page about this. Like, I don't think this year at awards is going to be many surprises.
There shouldn't be.
At all.
The Hart Trophy is the one that has the most intrigue.
The only one.
And we still wait for the finals.
Like, fire out some trophies here.
Norris, Quinn Hughes.
That's going to be Quinn Hughes.
Yeah. The other guys, it's like, he had a good year, but Quinn Hughes was excellent.
Quinn Hughes.
What else do we have? The Calder.
It's going to be Connor Bedard.
Scott,
bless Brock Faber.
Yeah.
Bless him. Bless him. Oh, I know. You were on that train. Bless him. But it's going
to
be Connor.
Scott Loughlin actually made a good point about that this week when I was talking to him. Was Brock Faber had a great year, but Connor Bedard did nothing to lose the award. Because he was the favorite going in, by a heavy favorite.
Didn't have the games.
Yeah.
And you can make the argument that right now Brock Faber is a more complete player than Connor Bedard is and plays a tougher position to break into the NHL at.
And he went from playing less minutes when Jared Spurgeon was around to Jared Spurgeon's out. Here's all the minutes.
And no wall.
Yeah.
Did not hit a wall.
That extension, which is eligible this year, this summer, July 1st, that's going to be a biggie.
I'll tell you what.
That seems like an 8x8.
Just as an aside, we always talk about when it comes to Los Angeles Kings, we're going to continue to have this conversation about Rob Blake and his future with the Los Angeles Kings, and does he want the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade back? You think he wants a Kevin Fiala trade back?
I was thinking
that's Faber going the other way.
Yeah. Well, on a team that, especially when you're going up against the Edmonton Oilers in the first round every year, it'd be nice to have some added help on the back end.
That guy's got Norris's in him.
Now, that trade has worked out in the regular season for the LA Kings. Kevin Fiala has been great in the regular season. Yeah. He had a great second half this year. But Brock Faber playing, you know, a lot of nights, 25 to 28 minutes,
yeah,
and doing it without any hiccups.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny about all of this is that Luke Hughes had a really good year, too. And we're not even talking about him for the Calder.
Luke Hughes had a decent year. Logan Cooley,
yep,
had a really good year.
Yep.
Like, there are a few, but the two that distinguish themselves,
Connor
Bedard's going to win it.
And what were the other? What was the other award that...
Salke's going to be Barkov.
And the Vezina.
Vezina's going to be Connor Hellebuck.
Sure. So
like, there's not going to be any surprises at any of these awards. Like, there's so many obvious ones this year. Hart's the only one, and Jack Adams.
But even the Hart, there won't be a surprise. It's one of the three guys that we suspect, and it's nobody's going to be like, Nathan MacKinnon won the Hart. Oh, he never should have won it. No, nobody's going to say that.
You know what it's going to be? I'll tell you exactly what it's going to be. When all of our votes get published, and everyone goes through and goes to, like, my line, and it's like, how did you not have blank in there? Because...
There were lots.
So many.
Yeah.
That you could add this year.
Yeah.
How did you have this person over that person? Like, this is going to be really, a really fascinating one.
Auston Matthews scored 69 goals. I think it was, 13 more than the next guy, which was Sam Reinhart.
Yeah.
And he's going to be fourth on the majority of people's ballots, is my guess.
Auston Matthews is going to be top five in Selke voting.
No, I'm saying Hart, though.
I know,
but
I'm just saying.
He should be.
He's going to pop up in a couple of different spots.
We talked about that off the air, about his Selke candidacy and how much killing penalties or lack thereof
that
hurts
was
his case.
The knock against Datsyuk.
Yeah.
That was always a knock against Pavel Datsyuk.
But what did we say? You have to be next level as a defender or playing without the puck if you're going to win it without killing penalties.
Yep.
And I'm not sure. And Auston Matthews is really good. He's not Pavel Datsyuk good.
New. Okay. Let's hit a break here. Hal Gill comes up on the other side. We're going to get on Nashville Predators page. They'll face off against the Vancouver Canucks and look to stave off elimination tonight. Coming up at the top of the hour, Shana Goldman from The Athletic, the Too Many Men podcast as well, and Gary Lawless, the real mayor. I don't even know who the mayor is in Vegas. I just always say it's Gary Lawless.
I had her on, I don't know if she's still the mayor, but I had her on when they got the NHL franchise on Primetime Sports. I'm going to look it up. We'll take a break and then we'll talk about it after.
We have the real mayor coming up in hour two, Gary Lawless. All right, Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up in a moment, Hal Gill talking about the Preds. Keep it here.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. A couple of pair of sixes up for grabs this evening. Dallas Stars facing off against the Vegas Golden Knights. Watch that one. 10 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360. And your early game, folks. Vancouver Canucks facing off against the Nashville Predators as the venue shifts to Tennessee. 7 o'clock Eastern. Watch it on CBC and Sportsnet. Pleased to be joined by Hal Gill. No stranger to these parts. Longtime NHL defenseman, now analyst with the Nashville Predators. Hal, how are you today?
Good. I thought you were referring to me as a six. I was hoping for a seven, but I'll take a six.
Hey, I gotta ask you here. But before we get on the Preds page and, you know, go through the sort of the specifics of a lot of the players, Jack Adams Award nominees come out today. Not exactly a surprise, and, you know, two coaches involved in this series. So Rick Tocchet is up for it. You know, Bones in Winnipeg is up for it as well. And Andrew Brunette, he's been up for it before. Like, it's a really impressive resume that in a very short amount of time that Andrew Brunette has left before everybody. Players like him, I would imagine analysts love him as well. Really personable guy, thoughtful hockey person. Why does it seem to click with teams and sort of everywhere that he goes? I mean, he was sort of the heir apparent in New Jersey. I'd looked for the while there as well. Why is it clicked with Andrew Brunette and Nashville?
I think just his style, right? I mean, if you go in, I talked to Phil Forsberg. I said, Phil, what do you think of Brunette? He said he wants puck possession game. And when we don't have the puck, we want to go get the puck. Phil Forsberg doesn't want to stay back and defend. Yeah. he wants to go and play. And I think that's kind of resonated with the team that as a defenseman, I'm not going to back in. I'm going to go get the puck. And I think up and down the lineup, he wants them to play their game and have their creativity. He has a specific way he wants to play. And once guys get that, I feel like there's a good buy-in. And so for me, if you have a coach that wants to play with the puck and gets a buy-in, that's everything you need. I think he has a positive vibe with the guys. He understands everyone's got a different role on a team, but in the end, they all want to win games, and I feel like they bonded around his system.
Yeah, I do wonder too. I think we all do. How much influence? And maybe the answer is none, and there's like a sharp line distinguishing the two based on title. But is there any type of influence that Barry Trotz still has on this team on the ice? Or is this 100% ziplocked and sealed Andrew Brunette?
I think Trotzy, just because he's an inquisitive guy and he wants to be in the know, I don't think he goes in and says, hey, Bruno, I want you to do this. I want you to do that. I think he goes in and says, tell me what you're doing. How are you playing this? And what are you doing? What is your plan for this guy? And how are you planning to use this system and implement it with these players? So I think he wants to know. So I think for a long time, they were talking regularly. And I think it's probably dropped off since. I think Trotzy said, okay, now this is your team. Go and do your thing and focus on getting to the playoffs and having success in the playoffs. But I think in the lead up to it, I'm assuming there was a day-to-day conversation where they're just trying to learn how to work, because I think they both see the value of working together. You can't just say, hey, here's your players, and it doesn't matter what you want. You just got to play with them. And as a coach, you can't just sit there and expect this guy when you get that guy. So I think there's got to be a good crossover, and I think they found that. But now I think it's Bruno's system, it's Bruno's way, and he's going with it.
How is he with Saros? And I want to frame this one very specific way. When Pekka Rinne was with the Nashville Predators, Pekka Rinne was a goaltender that liked to, you know, feel the puck a lot early, get into the game, liked to have that. And that was under Barry Trotz. And then when Peter Laviolette took over, it was all about limiting chances, shot suppression. And it was almost like Pekka Rinne struggled because he wasn't getting to feel the puck, wasn't able to get into the flow of the game. And it took some adjustment there. And that was all just based on how Peter Laviolette felt the Nashville Predators should behave in their own zone. How is Andrew Brunette with Saros? Or sorry, rather, how is Brunette's system with Saros?
Yeah, I talked to Juice earlier in the season and just said, how's it going? Do you like the coach and everything? And he said, it's taken some time to get used to, because I feel like Bruno's system defensively is they want to get quick stops and they want to push to the offense. And sometimes they jump the gun on it. Mm-hmm. And so if they're not in sync, they create, there's a turnover cause, then it's coming from a different angle. It's not necessarily a, you know, playing card five that they want to just shrink the zone and get stops.
Yeah.
They're anticipating the puck going. So I think that gave Juice some different looks early on. And I think he's adjusted to it. And I think, you know, up and down the lineup from defensemen to forwards to the goal, including Juice, they're seeing different looks. And I think that's adjusting to that and then kind of reading, okay, this is where the looks are going to be coming from. This might be a quick two-on-one out of the corner because we're anticipating that go. And so this might be a play off the boards as opposed to a play to the slot. You know, just different looks. And I think that, you know, it's you're trying to create offense from the back end and from the D zone. And so you're going to leave some gaps there. And I think Juice has had to learn how to fill in those gaps.
All right, vibe check with the Nashville Predators. We know on the Vancouver side, maybe it's a small thing, but you played and you know how these things can sort of magnify. We see JT Miller wearing Shelov's dress shirt in practice yesterday. Keep it loose, keep it friendly, keep it fun. It's all good. I know it's playoffs and it's serious, but what's the vibe check with the Preds right now?
I always find it funny, and I've been on those teams, and I was usually the guy that did something stupid to loosen the mood, you know, like that was kind of my role. But then you look at it and you say, okay, should we force trying to be loose, or are we loose? Are we comfortable in this position? I think the Preds are comfortable with where they're at, but they also have a heightened awareness. I think they were before game five, I got the vibe that they were pretty intense. They weren't really loose. They were focused and dialed in. And so I think they're trying to keep that. Not to say that they're not having fun with this. I think they're focused on what they're doing, but I don't think they're in the mood to really yuck it up and feel like, hey, we have to loosen it up because this is all great. I think they're sensing the urgency, but I certainly don't think it's where they're over anxious or over tight. I think they're in a good spot, and hey, who knows? Everyone kind of goes through that, but once it comes game time, you're either too tight, you're too loose, you're whatever, right in the middle, and you don't really know until it comes to game time. So I think they're in a good spot. We'll just have to wait and see how it goes.
Did they have a Hal Gill on that team? Like, is there someone who's like, hey, you know what? Let's poke the air out of the balloon here. Everything's too tight.
Yeah, I think they have those guys. I think that, you know, you look at Ryan McDonagh is kind of that solid guy, like that solid stoic.
Yep.
Guy, I feel like, Tyson Berry got in the lineup and did a great job.
Sure did.
He's the jokester. I think he has some fun. And I think there's, Roman Josi is more of that. I'll control everything. I got my feelers out for everything, but a little bit more emotional. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a young group of guys that go out there. Like Michael McCarron is a guy that is always chirping. He's always vocal. Kiefer Sherwood is a guy that's gone out and stirred the pot with the other teams. He's not afraid to chirp everyone. And then guys like Luke Evangelista, I think it goes under the radar that he's just a character. He's fun to be around, and he's kind of that lighthearted, hey, I'm just a young kid in the NHL and everything's awesome and I'm going to go and play hard. And I think there's a different vibe with every guy in the locker room. But I think that what makes it special is I don't think there's you can point a finger at that's the guy. I think they have a good feel of all of those guys all the way around.
Alongside Hal Gill. Hal, in advance of tonight's Game 6, Nashville Predators, Vancouver Canucks, let's go back a couple of games here. Now, I'm a big fan of Colton Sissons. And I have, going back to his game as junior, I just like what he brings to the lineup here. How was he after the goalpost heard round the world?
It's funny. I feel like that's one of those things where, he did everything right. You can't hold your head about it, but I've been there before, and I cost the games in the past, and it stinks. And you think, okay, it's a team game, and everyone did it. I'm sure every guy has gone up to him with media and coaches. It happens. Don't worry about it. But it did happen, and they did lose. And is that a big part of it? Yeah, sure. And so I think for him, I think he's at a point in his career where he knows, hey, this happened. But he also knows he could go out and, like he's done before, he got a hat trick in the playoffs, and he's the hero again. And so I think he's been around enough to know that, one break doesn't define you. And I think a large part of the team is looking at that two-goal deficit that was erased, including that empty netter off the post, as kind of a rallying cry. And this team has done it before. And so, I hate to bring up the U2 thing, but that was a devastating loss. And they turned it around. And that season was a turning point. I think this team, they've been there. They've seen it. And they're looking at that little hiccup in game four as, hey, that maybe that's this what's going to break us on this winning streak, and we're going to start to put together wins. And I think they're kind of relying on that now, and they have a good feeling about it. I think that's what adversity in the season does for you. You need that in the postseason, as you've seen so many teams that are, hey, great regular season, everything was really smooth, and they get hit with adversity and they can't react and they can't overcome it. And I think this team is built for it. So we'll see.
Hal, I'm going to ask you something that's going to sound like a stupid question, and it might be a stupid question. You be the judge. The audience will be the judge. Considering how important empty net goals are, is that something that is ever practiced? Is there ever a moment where it's like, okay, this game scenario with the net, probably we need to be able to hit the empty net? Or is it just something that, by this time in your career, you should be able to hit an empty net? We know it's not as easy as that. We know how hard it is, the stress, the pressure, all of it. Like, if you're just a casual hockey fan, you say to yourself, well, how do you miss that? It's an empty net. Well, it's quite possible to miss an empty net in a high-pressure situation. But is that ever anything that gets practiced?
Well, I think it's the whole thing. Like, I can hit that putt 10 out of 10 times, but then as soon as 50 grand is on the line, and I don't have 50 grand in my pocket, then, that's a different story. But I was never a guy, like when I played, you wouldn't ice the puck with the hope of getting it in. Now, the exception to that was Ray Bourque. I played with him, and, and he took the shot all the time. And I said, hey, we shouldn't do that, right? And he's like, I'm Ray Bourque. I do whatever I want. And the odds of me hitting the empty net are pretty good. And the odds of you hitting it are not as good. So we'll take our chances with me. But, yeah, guys, I do that all the time. And I think the more you trust in your face-off team, the more you can go for it, you know, like getting that puck down. But I think you can practice it all you want. Think about how many like morning skates you get out there 10 minutes early. How many times do you rip around and shoot on an empty net? It's constant. Yeah. It's just when it comes down to a clutch moment and you got a guy coming at you, how are you going to make that play? And do you pass it off or do you look for your teammate or what do you do? I think that it's part of being clutch. It's not an easy thing to do. I think to the average fan, they just look at it and like, hey, dummy, just put it in the empty net. Well, it's not that simple.
Raymond Bourque, my producer, Matt Marchese, passes along to him. He had 17 empty netters in his career. So, yeah, no surprise. Give me the puck. I'm Ray Bourque. Let me just follow up on Bourque for 1 second, because I'm always fascinated by one thing that Bourque did while he played. And, you know, Maple Leafs fans will look at 1967, remember that empty netter by George Armstrong, and it's Alan Stanley, defenseman, who's taken the draw against Jean Beliveau, I believe, in the Maple Leafs' own zone. How many times did you see Ray Bourque take faceoffs when you were with him?
I don't think I ever saw him take a faceoff. I don't know that. I am still listed as one faceoff that I never remember taking. So I think I was listed as taking one faceoff that never happened, as far as I know.
Because Ray was the one defenseman who was like, and I think his percentage was really good too. This is something I got to look up, and we're getting sidetracked here. Should be talking about
the series. I don't remember that.
But Ray would take.
I think a 5-on-3 at one point he did take. He may have taken some draws.
But I'm talking like 5-on-5. Bourque every now and then would take faceoffs. Anyhow, getting sidetracked. What is this game, as you think about it, before we drop the puck tonight, what does this game look like to you in advance of Game 6?
I'm excited. First of all, Nashville is buzzing. There's a Morgan Wallen concert at Nissan Stadium. There's Nashville Sounds are playing tonight. There's a show at the Ryman. It's going to be mayhem. Broadway is going to be buzzing. I think our fan base in Smashville is going to be amped up, especially after that devastating loss in Game 4. They want redemption. So I think it's going to be loud. I think it's going to be an intense game. I think the Preds have really found their game in this series, and they've limited scoring chances. They've shut down guys like Pettersson. I think they've given up too much to Besser and to Miller and to Hughes, certainly on the power play. So I think if the Preds go into this one with that energy that they have and stay out of the box like they did in Game 5, I think there's a good vibe that they can win this game. I think 5-on-5, they've been a good team. And so I think they're trying to ride that and stay on top and kind of get this momentum that they got from that Game 5 win. So we'll see. I think this is going to be as fun a game as there ever was.
This one looks – it sounds like it's going to be fantastic. Game 6 tonight, Vancouver Canucks facing off against the Nashville Predators. Watch it on CBC and on Sportsnet. Hal, thanks as always for stopping by. Enjoy the game tonight and everything else that Nashville has to offer this evening, it sounds like.
Going to be a fun night. I'm hoping for a big win and a big Game 7. That'll be fun.
Always love a Game 7. Look for that one on Sunday. The great Hal Gill, analyst for the Nashville Predators, former NHL defenseman. All right, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. We are going deep into the weekend for this one, Matt Marchese.
Let's look ahead to Sunday. In the first game of the second round, Hurricanes at the Rangers. No line set yet, but one would suspect it's Rangers -1.5 since they're the home team. Losing team has scored 2 goals or less in the last 6 meetings between these two. 4 of the last 5 games have been decided by 1 goal. The Rangers won 2 of 3 matchups this season. So this series marks for the first time since 1947 that a head coach and a captain who won a cup together in that fashion will square off.
Very good.
Do you know who the pair was?
Peter LaViolette and Rod Brind'Amour.
Yes, and who was the pair in 1947?
Oh, I don't know. Who was it?
Dick Irvin and Hap Day.
Oh, no way. Happy Day. Well done. Power plays, Carolina second in the NHL, New York third. Penalty kill, Carolina first, New York third. Special teams could be an excellent wash here in this one. I can't wait for this series. I really can't. This one looks like it's going to be fantastic. The Drurys going up against each other.
Sure,
GM Drury, Chris with the Rangers, Jack with the Carolina Hurricanes. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Shannon Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. kicks off hour two in moments.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to hour two. As just off camera, if you're watching on 360, Matty Marchese is looking up empty net stats from around the NHL. Matty, is this going to be your obsession today, empty net goal stats?
Yeah, I'm just tweeting it out there, what we found out.
Want to share it?
Sure.
Tweet it?
Yeah, sure. So we talked. So for anybody that missed it, Hal Gill brought up Ray Bourque and empty net goals and how good he was.
Give me the puck, Hal.
Yeah, just
I'll
give me the puck.
From anywhere. I'm Ray Bourque.
I shoot, you don't. So Ray Bourque is first among defensemen all time with 17 empty net goals.
Yeah.
Second, it's actually a tie for second.
Mm-hmm.
Shea Weber, which you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Hampus Lindholm.
Yep.
With 12.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them with 12.
There was a while, by the way, and people used to laugh at me for this one. When he was with Anaheim, that outside of Drew Doughty, he was probably the most impactful and best defenseman in the Western Conference. Very quietly, because he played in Anaheim.
Yeah, and nobody stayed up to watch the games. Well, not nobody, but a lot of people didn't. Certainly these Coast
people. Yeah, I was just going to say, just in the East, Matt.
Yeah.
Those games don't end just after midnight in the West.
No, but Anaheim also wasn't like a juggernaut either. So they were not appointment viewing. How about that?
I always liked those LA Anaheim games. Man, those were rough. Anything else there quick? Netters?
No, I'm going down this stupid rabbit hole now. I'm finding all sorts. I haven't had anything yet.
Can I give you some homework?
Sure.
Look up Brett Hull.
Empty net goals?
Empty net goals, Brett Hull. We'll get there in a second.
Yeah, I think it's a low number.
Well, and there's a reason for that, and I'll bring that up in a couple of moments. Okay, so Shayna Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast has been waiting very patiently. And I was always told, do not let important people wait as long as I just did with you, Shayna Goldman. How are you?
I'm so impatient over here.
I know.
Listening to you guys talking about Western Conference games not mattering because they're so late at night, I mean, come on.
That's Matt Marchese. That's not me. I love me some West Coast hockey. You know that. Come on. That's all Matt Marchese.
I know you're big on staying up late.
I know. You can see the Louis Vuittons I have under my eyes are earned, Shayna Goldman. Those are earned Louis Vuittons under the eyes. Just as a wide brush thought to kick things off. And by the way, how are you? It's a Friday here. Looking forward to some weekend action. I look at the first round so far and kind of go, it's been okay. You know, too many series that are over early. We had the one sweep. There's a lot of five gamers. Cross our fingers. We're not just going to have the one game seven, but maybe three. How would you describe the first round, Shayna Goldman?
It's been so mid. I mean, like, this is the time of year we're waiting for, and this is how we get rewarded. Like, it's been the most dramatic regular season ever. Like, okay, I know I'm assuming you're not big on watching The Bachelor over here, but, you know, every season you'd hear Chris Harrison say, this is the most dramatic season yet, and you roll your eyes. But like the NHL, it's true. Like that's the branding we need this year. And the playoffs just haven't matched that energy at all. Thank you, Dallas Vegas, for saving us. And even Vancouver, Nashville, especially those third periods, I feel like people aren't loving that series enough and appreciating it for what it is. But the East is just underwhelming because like we knew the Battle of Florida could be pretty one-sided, right? But I think we all held out hope that it would be a little more action-packed in the short span of games it would potentially reach. So I'm very underwhelmed so far. I do like how round two is shaping up, and I feel like round two could be a banger. But, hey, I thought round one was going to be a banger. So maybe we'll be back here in a couple weeks being bored again.
I got to give you credit because you and I on this program, before the playoffs began, I said, what's your pick for the series that's going to be the most exciting? And you said Vancouver and Nashville, and we looked at you like you had three heads. Well, you know what? It's been one of the better series. And listen, Dallas and Vegas have set the standard. Like, that's the bar. Like, that series has been tremendous. But coming in second, Vancouver and Nashville, we'll see it again tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Vegas, Dallas is everything we could have wanted and more. And, like, we know what they can be because we've seen them play each other in recent years in round three. Now we're just getting it in round one. You knew whoever Vegas was going to match to in round one was going to be a good series because you were going to have a tight battle because both teams are so good. But Vancouver, Nashville had that like sneaky potential, and we're seeing it. It's different than I thought it would be. I honestly thought it'd be, I thought there was a chance we'd get that defensive battle that we're seeing game to game, but I thought it would be a little bit more high scoring and we'd see teams loosen up a bit.
Yeah.
I'm still like waiting for that to happen. Like one period, they just kind of explode. But to me, it's still interesting. It's interesting to see how each team adjusts. It's interesting to see how the Canucks are handling their goalie situation. That's like a wrinkle we didn't expect. How the, you know, how are the star performers going in Vancouver and how they aren't going versus how Josi McDonough are just bringing it every night. Like, it's definitely interesting.
The other thing about this series is, and you know, the awards just came out, it is Andrew Burnett and Rick Tocchet, two of the three that are up for the Jack Adams Award. Rick Bowness is the other head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. We'll see if he's back next year behind the bench for the Jets, a conversation for another show. But Andrew Burnett and Rick Tocchet, do you have a thought on both these coaches? Two are up for the Jack Adams. Like, I think the fair assumption is that Rick Tocchet is probably going to win this thing. But do you have a thought on how each of these coaches have handled their teams so far?
It feels like Rick Tocchet was the slam dunk pick month one into the season. And I get it. I give him a lot of credit because we've been talking about the Canucks all year about being, you know, power play merchants, shooting percentages, off, you know, off the charts, save percentages, crushing it with Demko. I give him credit for the second half of the year because when they lost Demko, I think they improved on both ends of the ice at 5-on-5 a lot. They didn't always have the results to show for it, which is what happens. Your shooting percentage goes up and down, and this is just how it goes in hockey, which is why everyone had those concerns about them earlier in the year. But I liked how they turned it around at the end of the season to come together and I think have a deeper approach and look better on both ends of the ice. For the Predators, it's interesting because for Brunette, we look at him and we think of him as a high-flying coach with a rush-based offense. Look at Florida, look at New Jersey under him. The first month of the season, if you went through coaching impacts and you went through what new coaches are doing, the biggest difference for Nashville, who they weren't a bad team when he took over, was how much better they were defensively in that first month of play and how well they were protecting the middle of the ice. As the season went on, I think he added more of that offensive pop that we want to see. We know guys like Tommy Novak can bring it off the rush. They did it. He did at the end of the John Hines tenure last year. But I think you saw a little bit more offense and tempo because when the Predators went on their run through the end of the season, you go up 5-on-5, they're one of the best shot and scoring chance suppressing teams, which you expect, right? We know that Predators identity over the years and hold on to it. But they were one of the best offensive teams too. So I give him a lot of credit for that as well, because that's what we expected from him, but he's getting to it differently. And I think he's built on it. I think he's more ready to be an NHL coach than he was a couple years ago.
Certainly. And you know, one of the things too, and I don't know if this is a Andrew Burnett effect on this one player specifically, but somehow, I don't want to say out of nowhere because he's been with us seemingly forever, but out of nowhere, Gustav Nyquist has just had the best career of his season at the very young, ripe age of, checks notes, 34. All of a sudden, it's like 70 points and 35 goals. Is there something that you look at with Nyquist and say, okay, this is the unsustainable part and he's just sort of dining out on it right now and that explains this season? Like, can you explain the Nyquist season to me and all of us?
You know what? He's showing in the NHL that there's life after 30, which some of us analysts like to say there isn't, and we go aging curves and this and that. Yeah. So for me, I'm like, thank you. Thank you, Nyquist. Love to hear that things can get better from here. But you look at that top line, and I don't have those like unsustainable vibes from it. I think that they just work so well together. And I think that everybody does their part, right? You have Ryan O'Reilly, who you know to be someone that can play tough minutes and be really good defensively and handle the center position really well. And I think there were some questions about that in St. Louis, right? At the end, can he still drive his own line? And then he went to Toronto and played with such high-end players. So it was still tough to judge. I think that O'Reilly's really a playmaker and didn't have players to finish those chances. And I think Nyquist is doing a good job of it. And so is Forsberg. I think Forsberg is an outright elite winger. He's a great puck carrier. He's an underrated playmaker. So for Nyquist, you come in, you don't have to be the driver on that line. You can be the passenger, but you just need to be a utility player who can help facilitate plays. And I think he's doing that. And I think it's just the right role for him at this point in his career. But I liked his game last year when he came back from injury and played a little with Minnesota. I would have kept him if I were the Wild instead of Marcus Johansson. So you can see, like, I thought the potential was still there. He just needed to be healthy, and now he's being maximized, and he's healthy.
Let me talk about healthy here with you for a second, and we'll go to the other end of the ice and the Vancouver Canucks. I'm not sure about you, but for me, maybe I'm not 100% there yet, but I'm in the transition right now of moving from eventually Elias Pettersson is going to explode to Elias Pettersson must be hurt. Where are you at with Elias Pettersson? Because obviously he does not look like the Elias Pettersson that we're used to. I get it. But I'm moving away from he's going to explode and into he's hurt slash injured territory. What about you?
I'm with you. I think game five, I saw a little more promise than I did through one through four. But there's something off there. His playmaking doesn't look as good as it usually does. His shot isn't as efficient. He's not reaching the net as often. There's not enough like oomph behind his shots that you're seeing. You're seeing that decision earlier in the series to pass instead of shoot, which makes me think, is there a reason why? Is there an injury that you're doing that? I also think his line mates are dragging him down a bit. So that's where I try to go, maybe it's not just pure injury or purely on him. Mikheyev feels like a weight on that line. And Nils Höglander hasn't been as good as we've seen him be, right? I feel like he's kind of struggling. I don't know if it's the playoff environment or if it's just the way the Predators play defense that he's not holding on to the puck enough to help Pettersson do his thing if he wants to create scoring chances. So it's a little bit of both right now. I think that when we saw someone like Besser jump up and you see him play with like Miller and you get him to see him play with more play drivers, I think that he looks a little bit better, but who wouldn't? I still can't help but think, though, there's some sort of injury. And I get it. Like, who isn't hurt this time of year?
For sure.
So it's hard to say everyone's playing through something, but it feels like there's something that's really limiting him, you know, with his shot making right now.
I say the same. I feel the same about, you know, not just Pettersson here, but I feel the same about Quinn Hughes, about Filip Hronek, with the Vancouver Canucks. Like, I look around Vancouver, and A, loaded with skill, loaded with talent, should be able to beat Nashville. But then I say to myself, well, Pettersson doesn't look 100% to me. Quinn Hughes, as great as he is, and there's an Norris Trophy waiting for him at the end of this rainbow, he doesn't look as good as he normally does. Hronek can't get anything going here. I don't know. Like, I went into this series saying it's a Vancouver series, it's a Canucks series to lose. I'm not so sure about that anymore in advance. And I just don't know whether that's just based on what I saw last game. And here I am in the playoffs going like, okay, next game is going to be predicated by what I saw the previous game. I don't know. A long-winded way of saying, I don't know what to expect out of the Vancouver Canucks, Shayna. Do you?
No, not really. Because you go into the series and go, what do they have that Nashville doesn't? It starts with star power, right? They have a lot more star power than Nashville. It's not to take away from Saros, Uosi, and Forsberg, who are all amazing in their own rights. But it felt like the star power plus the depth plus the strength down the middle was really going to give Vancouver an advantage here. And then they lose Demko, which was, you know, a great advantage for anyone to have. And they've still managed to win games, but they're not always the better team.
Yeah.
And you can get by on that for so long, but I look at the Predators and go, they're a team that's greater than the sum of their parts. The way that they operate, I think, is really impressive. And we saw it through the second half of the year. You have two of the best teams of the second half of the year matching up. So you don't know fully what you're going to get. But the Canucks, when they win the games, are not winning them the way I would expect them to, because I would expect Quinn Hughes to be turning the game on its head more often. And look, he did, right? That's the reason that they took that 3-1 series lead in the first place.
Yep.
You saw Quinn Hughes with the keep in, and that's what star power can do. And that's a big reason why Vancouver is up in this series, but you would expect to see it a little bit more often, and we're just not. So it's hard to say, because even the last game, you look at that Ryan McDonagh missed scoring chance and you go, that's going to be a moment Nashville remembers all summer, just like the Colton Sissons post on the empty net shot game before. And then the Predators somehow manage to turn it around. It's so tough to say, because it's literally a game of inches and margins, and every cliche you want to use, it applies here.
Let me pivot to the Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins. We spent a lot of the first hour, Maddie and I did, talking about this improbable comeback by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, they were left roadside, left for dead. You know, don't even bother to stop. Don't even call 911. That thing is dead. Just let it crawl into the ditch. And somehow, and without Austin Matthews as well, the Maple Leafs, and it's been great defensive effort from them, great goaltending by Joseph Woll as well, big players standing up. Jake McCabe is playing probably the best hockey of his entire career right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And now we get a game 7 out of this one. And I keep going back and forth on, this is something that's about the Maple Leafs versus this is something about the Boston Bruins. The answer is probably between the both of them. But from what we've seen in these last two games, and there's game seven coming up on Saturday, holy smokes, is it about what Toronto has done or more about what Boston hasn't?
It's somewhere in the middle. It usually is, right? Like, I'm cheating right now saying it's somewhere in the middle. But honestly, it is, because you look at it and you look at the Bruins and you go, I feel like they're just missed opportunities. You look at some decisions, some lineup decisions throughout the series, some goalie decisions, and you wonder, would that have been different if you went with Swayman in game two and really put a stranglehold on the series early? Yeah. To be in a 3-1 position, you know, you have ghosts of last year, of course. It's so
hang on, hang on. No team in the NHL has more ghosts than the one in the blue and white.
There.
Like in every teapot and like in everywhere, there are ghosts for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't think Leafs fans are going to have much pity for the Boston Bruins and their ghosts from 12 months ago.
No, I mean, the Leafs, they're always there. But it's the Leafs. It's like they're surrounded by a cloud of drama. So there must be some ghosts just floating around in those clouds at all times. It's something else, though. The way they came back, I was watching the first period last night, and you're watching the way the Leafs are out shooting Boston. And immediately I'm going, Boston's going to score a goal here. Yeah. And just deflate the Leafs. Yep. And that's what I kept feeling like was going to happen. I think it's a little bit different that it was Wolinet versus Samsonov, because I think he's been the better goalie. He gave him a quality start last game. I think he saved, I think Natural Stat Trick had him at 2.5 goal saved of expected, which was the best goalie performance by Leafs netminder this entire series. I think they need more from their top six still. Nylander was great last game. Yep. I have no complaints there. I think Matty Nyes was one of the most noticeable players on the ice.
Yep.
I think Domi probably wants a couple of those shots back that he didn't capitalize on.
The breakaway.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, that's Domi and Bertuzzi all season. It was the same story. And then they got hot at the right time. But you need to see that now. I think a big thing for the Leafs is they finally made the right lineup decisions. Well, I don't agree with how the Bruins have handled their bottom six in defense the last two games. I think putting Connor Dewar back and having a good defensive forward on that fourth line is a big advantage for the Leafs. I think taking Ryan Reeves out and getting away from that physical game that the Leafs feel that they have to play to match the Bruins is the right move. Because if you want to win this series, you just need to play, you need to play a hard game. And then you need to remember the skill that you bring to a lineup every night instead of getting away from that and playing into what the Bruins want.
You know, one of the interesting things about that is, and we saw this earlier in the game yesterday, it was the Maple Leafs acting as if they were the traditional Boston Bruins, like trying to take it to the Boston Bruins physically. Like, I don't know that I wasn't prepared for what I'm seeing out of Boston. That is a team that looks tentative and nervous and overwhelmed. Like, I'm just not prepared to see that from this team. And again, like, I think a lot of it too is, you know, going back to the memories of what happened last year up 3-1 against the Florida Panthers, overthinking game two. Do we need to stick with the rotation? You know, it got away from us last year. We're not going to let that happen again. So we're going to force Linus Ullmark into game two. That's the first game that the Boston Bruins lost. And all of a sudden, the series is tied going back to Toronto. Like, I'm unprepared considering the last two seasons to see a Boston Bruins team this overwhelmed. Like, who do you think's wearing it most? Is it Marchand? Is it Pastrnak? Is it McAvoy? It's not Swayman. I mean, Swayman's been fantastic for this team. Like, he's been, you know, the best goaltender in this series, hands down. But where do you see it the most on the Boston Bruins? You have Jim Montgomery essentially calling out David Pastrnak, we need more from Pasta, which I used to whisper all the time in university when I was broke. Where do you see, like, the effects mostly here with Boston?
I think it's weighing on the coaching a bit with some of their lineup decisions. And I think we saw an overcorrection in game two with the goalie starts to contrast last year. I think we saw an overcorrection pulling Matt Grzelcyk out, who I don't think looked great all series, but I think the game he was pulled out after, he didn't look that bad. I think Hampus Lindholm is wearing it. I think he's had a rough playoffs. He was okay last night, but he had a rough playoffs and he had an up and down regular season that I don't expect from him. And I think McAvoy had a tough game too. Like, I think he screened his goaltender when he didn't need to last night on one of those goals against. I think that Pasta's wearing it too, because we're not seeing him be as noticeable. When the Bruins are winning games in this series, I feel like we're talking about Brad Marchand, who's bringing it every night. I think not last night, but the game prior, we saw him get away from his game and get too involved in everything else, which I think he's been really good at balancing, like goading the Leafs into it, but then playing to his strengths, and he didn't do it last game. So, I mean, I think it goes on the Bruins stars. We always knew they were going to have some problems in the postseason because this roster isn't as good as it was a year ago. The center depth isn't there.
Yep.
They're not as good in transition. And at 5-on-5 all year, as good as they were, they didn't dominate games. That's why they had a ton of those games go to overtime that maybe shouldn't have. So it just feels like it's all coming to a head right now. And now the pressure's rising because, hey, you're here. You're going to game 7 when you shouldn't be. You could have won this series a lot sooner. So I think it's going to weigh on the guys at the top of the lineup and at the top of their blue line right now because the depth pieces really are interchangeable. But I don't know if I would have interchanged them the way that they were a little bit earlier in the series.
You know, it's interesting too, and you know, and Brad Marchand mentioned this, you know, if you told us at the beginning of the season it would be a game 7 in Boston against Toronto, like we would have taken that all game long. I'm not so sure about that. Like who does home ice sort of like, does Boston having home ice for game 7 better serve Boston? I mean, certainly by way of last change, but does it better serve Boston? Because we're talking about things like vibes and feelings and nerves and these types of things. Does it better serve Boston or does it better serve Toronto? We'll end on that one for this series.
You know, it's tough because in a lot of series, I think home ice can matter because I think some coaches are really good with the matchup game and we've seen it in the playoffs so far, right? Like look at the Canes, what they did at home against the Islanders.
Sure.
They knew to go Gensel versus Barzal and look at how they crushed them in their minutes. For the Bruins, I don't think it matters as much. I think in game 3 when they won in Toronto, it didn't matter for the Leafs at all. I think the Bruins were handed matchups and just killed them. So I just don't think at this point it matters as much as it could. I think it's a different series from where it was in game 1. It's a different series from where it was in game 4, right? Like it felt like, all right, this could be done sooner than later. So I just don't think it matters as much as it could. I think sometimes when it comes down to the nitty gritty in a game 7, like the matchups can get overthought a little bit. So it's tough. And also like Marchand's not matching up against Matthews like he was earlier in the series. It's a different ballgame because you have a different looking lineup to deal with.
True. Okay. So we started this conversation by, treating the first round, essentially by saying the first round has been akin to sorting out your sock drawer by level of excitement. And we'll see what happens in the couple of game 6s, and we'll see what happens in the game 7s if we get more than one on Saturday. And we hopefully get 2 on Sunday. But you know what else is poised to be underwhelming here? Maddie and I were talking about this before he came on. I might get your thoughts on it. You and I talk a lot about awards. The awards, outside of the heart, are there going to be any surprises here? Like you go right down all the awards. Quinn Hughes is getting the Norris. Alexander Barkov is getting the Selke. Rick Tocchet is going to get the Jack Adams. Connor Hellebuck is going to get the Vezina. Like, go right down the list. And we complain about the first round kind of being a snooze, and we'll see if these 3 series can salvage it. But are the awards going to be the same? Outside of the heart.
Probably.
Outside of the heart.
Yep. It feels like it. Because it feels like for everything, it's like, okay, the Selke's a race for 2nd place and 3rd place. And it'll be interesting to see how everyone fills out their ballot, right? It'll be interesting to see for the Norris how many people do or don't have Cale Makar 3rd behind Roman Josi. Who does someone have 3rd for the Calder Trophy behind Faber and Bedard, which is probably going to be Bedard. As much as we had the conversation midseason, doesn't feel like we were at the end of the year. It's a little bit boring. Maybe we'll be hyping up the drama around the Lady Bang, right?
I'm trying to remember who I voted for the Lady Bang. I don't know. We're not
supposed
to
remember. A long talk about Noah Cates for it.
Noah Cates, because he had the very un-Philadelphia Flyers, like zero PIMs. Hang on. You want me to grab my ballot here? Let me grab my ballot. Okay.
Yeah. Let me pull mine up
Let me pull my ballot up here. I know we're not going to do the whole thing because I know that everyone always sort of freaks out. Don't do that before the awards.
Two of us. We're going to spoil all of the awards right now.
We're going to wreck all the awards for everybody. I'm not going to say I did have Noah Cates in there.
Yeah, I had him first, which we disagreed on, and
you put him first after that big conversation you and I had?
Yes, I did. I dug my heels in.
Whoa.
Because, listen, he goes up against top competition, right?
Yeah.
And plays heavy defensive minutes. To not take a penalty doing that is very impressive to me. And to not take a penalty when you could be frustrated about not scoring, also I gave him credit. Should I have? Maybe not. I feel like people count points for that. We count points for everything. Points are becoming too overrated in NHL awards. So that's why I had to put him first, out of spite.
Okay, I'm not going to give you the order, but here are my five for the Lady Bang. Elias Pettersson, Noah Cates, Austin Matthews, Braden Point, Jacob Slavin.
Okay. We're a little different.
Oh, we are.
Yeah. Okay. Out of order. Well, Noah Cates first, because I already said that.
Yeah,
but
you
out
got
of
that.
Order.
Yeah.
Jacob Slavin.
Okay.
Mattias Micheli.
Oh, nice
Kyle
pull.
Kyle Connor.
Okay.
And Gus Nyquist.
I was considering Gus Nyquist too. That was one because I was trying to figure out, okay, I want to get some type of acknowledgement for Gus Nyquist in here somewhere. So really, so no Elias Pettersson.
I felt like I should have put him on and I had already pressed submit. Like, I feel like I snubbed him a little bit, but I did like Micheli on there at the end that I was like torn between those two, honestly. Because I, you know what, sometimes I look at guys on teams that struggle and deal with things and how they handle it. And I feel like that should be accounted for, right? If you're not the biggest offensive scorer, you're not on a great team and you can hold your discipline, I feel like that counts for something.
Okay, let's have at it here then.
Okay.
In out of order again, Selke Trophy.
Okay.
I've got, again, in no particular order, Adam Lowry, Alex Barkov, Jordan Staal, Sam Reinhart, Austin Matthews.
Okay, we're different on one player.
Only one?
Only one.
Only
what
you
one. Got? Okay, I went Hintz over Reinhart. In the end.
How'd you get Rupe Hintz in there? I really wanted to get Rupe Hintz in there because I love Rupe
Hintz. I told you, he moved up end of season. You know what it was too? It was his first year going up against top competition completely, entirely on his own versus sharing that workload with Foxa like he did last year. So I gave him credit for that. I struggled with the winger versus center discussion because I know everybody says, you know, center has more defensive responsibilities and they count face-off wins and things like that. And I understand that. So I went through Barkov and Reinhardt's shifts together in the defensive zone to see who is the driver of it. And it's Barkov. And then I did the same with Jarvis and Staal. And it's Staal. Like, Jarvis is helping them transition out of their own end and turn defense into offense. But who's in the corners battling it out is Jordan Staal. So I gave him the edge for that, too. I would probably have Staal and Jarvis 6 and 7. I'm sorry, Reinhardt and Jarvis 6 and 7.
All right, Calder. Again, in no particular order, although I think we know who the 1 and 2s are for everybody. Faber, Bedard, Luke Hughes, Logan Cooley, Tyson Forrester.
5 for 5.
Did you go Forrester too? That was a wild card I thought in there.
Yeah, I had Forrester.
Oh, I do like Tyson Forrester.
I like him. He was good for the Flyers, especially in the second half of the season. I feel like he was what they needed.
Yeah. Okay, last one here. I'm not sure how entertaining this is to anybody. We go over our awards ballots. Again,
it's like everyone's getting to listen into our phone calls. How are we doing?
No kidding. Norris Trophy, no particular order. Noah Dobson, Cale Makar, Quinn Hughes, Roman Josi, Adam Fox for your guy here.
Slight tweak.
Okay.
Adam Fox, Josi.
Yeah.
Hughes. Forsling, Morrissey.
Gustav Forsling is such a hipster pick. I love it.
He was so good this year. And like, it's cheating a little bit because he played with Barkov so much and he crushed it with Barkov. Dobson was very close for me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when Patrick Roy took over, he was better. I think he was better when the team was terrible, if that makes sense.
I know what you mean.
He was so much above the rest.
I know what you mean.
And then I felt like you saw guys like Romanov pick it up under Patrick Roy, and you saw Ryan Pulock pick it up a little bit, Mike Riley, that I didn't see Dobson can like maintain that same level all season.
Hey, let me close on the Islanders here while we're there, because today was, you know, closeout day and interviews day, and, you know, Matt Martin saying he'd love to be back, and, you know, everyone, you know, Kyle Clutterbuck, et cetera. I don't know what they're going to do or how they're going to do it. Pretty sure they're going to look for more goal scoring. You know, just the hardest commodity to find in the NHL in the off season. Don't worry about us, even though we're sort of capped out here and kind of frozen. What do the Islanders do? Like, they lose against the Carolina Hurricanes. Okay, you have a look at the salary cap commits, and you say to yourself, they could have used a bigger bump for the salary cap next season. Like, what do the Islanders do through all of this, knowing that they have a couple of projects? One, get Sorokin's game back, and two, find other players that can score goals, and maybe find a winger to play with Horvat and Barzal. What do you do with the Islanders?
I feel like I keep getting myself in trouble talking about them, but I don't commit to Lou Lamoriello, which it sounds like they just did. I wouldn't have done it this year. I think that you look at the players that they have who are in their prime and you kind of got to get it going, right? Like you want to do this while mm-hmm. you have before players' age start taking over, which I think is going to be your concern in a couple of years with a few of these key guys that I look for someone more innovative to hurry up and not sign any more bad contracts to this team and any more 7-year deals. But since you can't do that, I mean, I wonder if like someone buying out someone like Pageau is an option because I don't know if anyone's going to take that contract just to get yourself a little more flexibility. Mm-hmm. I wonder if a guy like Wahlstrom, who has not lived up to his potential, I think it's on him. I think it's on coaching as well. I wonder if you kind of look for someone else in need of a new surrounding. Like, is a Kaliev someone that you could try to trade for there? I don't know. But like, those would be the kind of deals I look for to add someone with a little spark for that middle six role. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe someone in free agency will be available. They don't have a ton of high-end prospects like ready to go. I think you need a really good winger. And I think that you can reshuffle your center depth. And I think you can also take that third line and kind of knock them down to a fourth line and try to add just more offensively inclined players so it doesn't look like you're rolling two fourth lines at the bottom of your lineup.
Kaliev is such a fascinating name. I mean, there's no denying that guy can shoot and the guy's going to be able to score goals. The question is, can he get to position fast enough to do so? Like, if you have an environment, if you, because I think that's a fascinating name for the Islanders. If you have an environment where you can set up where by the time you get Kaliev in position, all he needs to do is shoot. If you can create that environment, what's that?
Barzell's pretty good at doing that.
He really is. He's a tremendous skater. It's not the worst idea in the world. If you just get him in a spot where, look, dude, all you need to do is when Barzell gives you the puck, that means it's your time to shoot because that guy can fire it. Shana, thanks as always. You're the best. Enjoy your weekend. What are you looking for tonight, by the way? Dallas and Vegas. Going to talk to the mayor in a couple of moments here, Gary Lawless.
I am looking for it to go to seven games because I won a seventh game, and I don't think Vegas is losing four straight.
I'm with you on that one. Okay, you have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me.
There she is, the great Shana Goldman from the Too Many Men podcast, also writes for The Athletic. We'll take a break. What's the mayor's name in Vegas, Maddie? What's her name?
Carolyn Goldman.
Okay. So
it's Carolyn Goodman, sorry.
She's the mayor by title,
mm-hmm.
but the real mayor of Vegas. She's actually born in Peterborough. It's Gary Lawless. He drains me in a couple of moments. It's Vegas and Dallas. Come on, Vegas, win this one because we want to see a game seven between these two teams. It is Vegas and Dallas tonight. The real mayor of Vegas, Gary Lawless, in a moment here. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, wherever you listen to your podcasts as well. Back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now, Maddie, I know you cheer for one team specifically, and that's the blue and white.
I'd like to say that I'm a realist, though.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think I am.
Yeah, you're really sane, Maddie.
No, I didn't. No, sane and realist are two entirely different things.
The point that I'm trying to make here
is
outside of cheering for that one team that mm-hmm. you adore, do you cheer for outcomes of games?
100%.
So if you are a fan of hockey, mm-hmm. tonight, now, Vancouver fans, cover your ears. Dallas fans, cover your ears. You're cheering for Nashville mm-hmm. because you want to see game seven in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And you are cheering for Vegas.
Correct.
Because you want to see seven games of this one. With that, we go to Vegas Golden Knights insider, the one and only Gary Lawless. It's been way too long since I said hi to Gary, so let's do it now. What's going on, GL? How are you? If you're watching on the Sportsnet 360, you're seeing Gary looking very, very sharp with a Stanley Cup champion poster behind him. How you doing, Gary?
Actually, even better than that is like there's like one of our I can't get it for you. That's like one of the Knights helmets that the guys skated through on the ice. I'm in a boardroom.
Oh, nice.
At our offices. Hey, listen, I got to do something really fast, Jeff.
Sure.
I am 1-0. In the history of my hockey fights, playing in the Peterborough Community Church Hockey League, a big blonde kid.
Yeah, who was it?
John Hanley from the Sacred Hearts Hearts.
Yeah.
I was playing for St. Pete's.
Okay.
He whacked me on the hands and I turned around and I suckered him before he knew it and laid him out. He's listening right now.
Oh, he
driving
is?
Around. Yeah, he's a big shot now in the medical industry. And we're actually, we went to university together. And,
yeah.
I bailed him out there a number of times as well. But he'll be furious right now and want to drive his car off the road. His brother, Justin Hanley, played for the Maine Mariners.
Oh, yeah. What era? Career. What era was with Maine?
Well, he was with the Kingston Canadians. He was Scott Arneal's teammate with Kingston. And his other brother, Mark, owns all the Tim Hortons in Belleville. And Mark played for the Sudbury Wolves. And their other brother, Matt, played for McMaster in CIS, is I guess what you call it. So
sure.
John was saddled with me.
What was he in Maine when? Let's see.
Early '80s.
Okay, so Doc would have been calling the games then. Mike Emmerich would have been calling the games then, right? Because that's where he started in the American League. So he would have any of the viz that he has, it would be with Doc Emmerich.
Mm-hmm. Quite possibly.
I'm getting a note here from Matt. Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah, Justin Hanley, 81-82 Maine Mariners.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, very good. Off to hockey.
He got in a car accident on his way home from there from Marmara. And
okay.
They, like the Therrians and the Crawfords and the Hanleys were the hockey families in that area. And Justin got in a car accident on his way home from a season in Maine and wrecked his knee and was never the same as a player.
Oh, geez. Anyway. Well, on that happy note, how's everything else, Gary? How's things in Vegas? Like I was just saying before you came on, like if you're a fan of hockey, tonight you're cheering for Nashville, so we get a game 7 in that one, and you're a fan of Vegas. So we get a game 7 of what has been an incredible series between these two teams. Like I know the outcomes haven't exactly been kind here to the Vegas Golden Knights and their fans, but still... Like, when you just look at the hockey right now, like, this has been the best series in the opening round so far. Vegas and Dallas. Your thoughts on it so far?
Well, every game has been close, right? The two games that Vegas won, they could have gone either way. Game 3, Dallas was clearly the best team. And I would say that Vegas was probably the best team for a longer stretch of Game 4. But they unraveled a little bit late in the second period. Dallas took advantage. Exact same scenario in game 5, unraveled a bit late in the second. Dallas took advantage, and then give Pete DeBoer and his team credit. They have been really good in the third period when they've had a lead. They've made it, you know, and Vegas was the same way when they had the lead in game 2 in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Two really good teams, really deep, both teams. Dallas playing, you have to say they're playing a little better right now. The one thing from a Golden Knights perspective is, you know, this team came together at the last minute, right? Stone was hurt, Hurdle's acquired, Hanifin's acquired, Petrangelo's injured. All these guys come back at the start of the playoffs. Will Carey in that list as well.
Yep.
And they haven't clicked yet. And so they haven't played anywhere near their best game. And doesn't matter, you know, right now Dallas is better. If Vegas finds its game, you know, in time for tonight, they'll win and there'll be a game 7 and we'll find out. But right now, you have to give Dallas a little bit of an edge in terms of level of play. The question is, can the Golden Knights, they have lots of room.
Yeah.
There's lots of ceiling for them. Can they get to it? That's the unknown.
Gary, let me ask you a goalie question here, and let me preface it by saying this. I have always been of the firm belief that when it comes to the playoffs, despite who might start the series, coaches always try to look for a reason to get their guy in nets. We saw this last year with the Florida Panthers series with the Boston Bruins. Alex Lyon started it, but the first hint that there could have been problems, Paul Maurice went to Bobrovsky.
I don't know if it was you I heard talking about this yesterday or somebody else, but I Aiden Hill did win the Stanley Cup.
I get it, but I just don't see anything that was was wrong with Logan Thompson's game
that
you look at and you go like, okay, we need a goalie change here. That's going to, like, again, with all due respect, like, you're right. He won the Stanley Cup for Bruce Cassidy. I get that. And that's the default setting for coaches. I want my guy in there. I guess this is more just a way of talking about Logan Thompson and saying, like, I get it. Coaches do it. I just didn't see that Logan Thompson did anything wrong to lose the net. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I was trying to cut you off because I don't think it's a matter of Logan is not Bruce's guy and Aiden is. I think they both are. I think they believed going into the playoffs they were going to need both guys. They were going to have to use both guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Logan had lost two games in a row. It had was tremendous in game three and was solid again in game four, but they'd lost both those games. And, I don't think anyone loved the overtime goal that Johnson scored in game three, including, I'm sure Logan didn't like it. And then the Dadonov goal where he scored from the corner, albeit like it was a crazy shot, right? I think it goes through Stevenson's legs before it hits Thompson in the head in the mask and bounces into the net. But, you know, you've lost two in a row. You're looking for ways you're looking for answers. That's why I think he went to Aiden Hill. And then I think Aiden was real good in game five after having not played for a while. And Sean Burke is probably of the opinion, you know, he was uncomfortable early, but found his game as the game went on.
Yeah.
And we'll find out in about half an hour or 15 minutes if it's Thompson or Hill tonight, because, you know, Burst will, you know, he'll have a decision to make on that front as well.
How much time did it take? And maybe it's a cozy 5 minutes, maybe it's a cozy 2 minutes. I don't know. How quickly did Vegas remind themselves of how much they hated Jamie Benn?
Well, I love Jamie Benn. I think he's, if I was starting a team, I'd want a guy like that. There's just no guys like him left out there, right? You know, McNabb puts the big hit on Stankoven.
Oh, yeah.
And Jamie comes right back and hammers all three guys from the Western League too, right?
Sure.
McNabb, Benn, and Stankoven, and we like our guys from the Western League in Vegas. And
Your GM's kind of a legend there, Gary.
Yeah, you know, Kelly calls the Western League the little NHL when you think about the travel, the schedule, and the fact that they you're required to play a hard game if you want to be successful in that league. So a real good proving ground.
When you're looking at tonight's game from the Vegas point of view, like, you know what you're going to get from a lot of players. Who are the wild cards here for Vegas? Like, if we're getting to a Sunday game here between Vegas and Dallas, and I'm crossing my fingers that we get there, outside of the obvious, like, Eichel's been great. He's got 7 points. But, like, who should we be looking at here for Vegas?
Well, Hurdle and Stone are the guys that that haven't done what you would expect them to have done so far. And again, that goes, like, I always believed that Vegas was going to be vulnerable in the first round. They came together late and they were going to draw a high end opponent, whether it was going to be Dallas or Edmonton. So if they couldn't find their game, that they were going to be in danger of losing in the first round. And that if Hurdle and Stone can cross over from good to great and be who we know they are, that could be a big difference in this series. Now, it's not like they're sitting back and smoking Parliament cigarettes or anything like that. They're both working hard and trying to find what they can do or how they can get through to that next level. That remains, again, that's the whole series for me. You know, Wyatt Johnson has been Dallas's best player. Yeah. Miro Heiskanen has played a ton. Ottinger has found his game. Eichel has got really good numbers, but he's not getting enough help from the top end elite guys in Vegas. And if they can find their game, Well, we've already got a series, but it could get, we could have a game seven.
Gary, let me close on this one. You mentioned Jamie Benn and how, you know, if you're looking for someone to build an organization around, build your team around, you go to Jamie Benn. For me, in this series, one amongst many players, which sort of fit that bill, is Alex Pietrangelo. Yeah. How has he been, in your estimation, in this series?
Well, he's had two tough penalties, right? That
yep.
have both resulted in goals that that led to victories for Dallas. I said this on our radio broadcast the other night. Vegas doesn't win the Stanley Cup last year without Alex Pietrangelo.
Yep.
And Vegas might not win that series against Edmonton without Alex Pietrangelo snapping a little bit. He thought the referees weren't doing their jobs, so he was going to play sheriff, and he slashed Draisaitl on the elbow pad. People get carried away. Alex knew exactly what he was doing. It was way more about show than it was, and the intent was to get him on the elbow pad, not an intent to injure, but it changed the series. You know, Draisaitl didn't have another point in the series, so if Vegas is going to do anything in terms of a long run, Alex Pietrangelo is going to be a big piece of it. I'll forgive him his indiscretions. Yes. I have a question for you before we go.
Yeah, shoot.
You follow this guy, Craig Baird, who's doing the Great Canadian Song Contest?
No, I haven't.
Oh my
Why?
God,
What's up?
This guy. Today they're down to the final 32 songs. Today it is Home for a Rest versus Carefree Highway.
Carefree Highway all day. Sorry, Carefree Highway all day long.
My brother Peter, who's a huge Gordon Lightfoot fan, and so am I, would side with you. But when I was covering the Colonial Hockey League in Thunder Bay, that song Home for a Rest was
it's great.
Would go to Lakehead University and hear it in the pub. I voted for Home for a Rest.
You did, I guess it. I went to university too, and I partied and drank the beer and had the fun and all that, and that was a soundtrack for all of it. But no, man, Carefree Highway is a song, all Gordon Lightfoot stuff, that will live in your head for the rest of your life.
I just watched the documentary. It was on Netflix. I just watched it, or one of the streaming services.
Yeah.
I just watched it a little while ago, and it was fantastic. And you forget how great he was. I almost got fired from my job in Thunder Bay because the publisher, who was this old guy who thought he knew more about music than he did, I told him that Neil Young was Canada's greatest musical export, and he said absolutely not. It was Gordon Lightfoot. That's a debate for another day.
Oh, I'm happy to have that one with you too, but not today, because we're going to watch game six tonight and hopefully game seven on Sunday. Thank you, Mayor of Vegas, the real Mayor of Vegas. There he goes, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Gary Lawless. Thanks, pal. You be good. Gary Lawless, Matt Marchese, coming in with a little Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah, so you'd be unhappy to know that Home for a Rest on that one is up 60.1% to 39.9%, 3,290 votes.
The masses is untruth.
I would agree with
in
you.
This,
I would agree.
In this democracy that we live in, you have the right to be wrong, and clearly in this one, people are wrong.
Home for a Rest also released, which I did not know, on February 20th, 1990. That was my first birthday, Jeffrey.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Which way would you go on that one?
Oh.
Home for a Rest or Carefree Highway?
Carefree Highway.
Carefree Highway.
Okay. Yeah, I really got into Lightfoot. Like, I knew a bunch of Lightfoot songs.
Yeah.
But I really got into it more, like, unfortunately, after his passing.
After he passed, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a few like that. Like, as I get older, I start listening to different, you listen to different things, and you've got things that you go back to.
Of course.
I've been a lot of Cat Stevens lately.
Sure.
It's great. It's more, my wife's like, why are you listening to some of this stuff? Like, even piano music. I'm like, I'm really trying to find a way to calm myself down right now.
The thing about Lightfoot, though, the haunting melodies and that voice will be with you forever.
So if there was ever a biopic, Chris Pratt would need to play Gordon Lightfoot.
Ooh,
younger Gordon Lightfoot.
I'm
like, holy smokes. Like, Chris Pratt would be almost a dead ringer.
I grew up with Lightfoot music in the house all the time.
Yeah.
Like, that was like,
it was great.
I came by it by way of my parents. Okay, thanks to Gary Lawless for the musical trip there and a preview of Game 6 between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Who are they playing? Oh, yeah, Dallas. Shannon Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hal Gill from the Preds, analyst for that team, stopped by in hour one to talk about Ray Bourque and empty net goals and face-offs and the Nashville Predators. They'll face off against the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Watch that game at 7 o'clock Eastern on CBC and Sportsnet. Late game on Sportsnet at 360 is the Vegas Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. Thanks to Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, Jen Rolnick, Jake Schultz. Have a great weekend. Some big hockey on the horizon. And take a moment. Today's a funeral for Bob Cole. Think of one of, if not the greatest play-by-play man the game has ever seen. Talk to you on Monday.